Hi, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I am speaking to Emily Trinetti of Coexistence Consulting, all about humane education. What is it? Why it's important for us as animal professionals? And what does it really look like? Practical applications of how you can be utilizing humane education every day when talking and consulting with clients and colleagues. Enjoy, everybody. Hi, Emily. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Excited to see your face, although our poor listeners won't be able to see your face.
Yes. Where did we meet? I can't even remember. Was it a behavior conference?
Yeah, it was. I saw you speak at the Pet Professional Guild's like aggression summit in Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Several years ago now. And I just absolutely loved your talks. They were very focused on like cat behavior and body language. And I think I just like introduced myself to you afterwards and said that I loved what you were doing. And I don't know, I think it just from there.
And I was like, Emily's great. We're friends now. which is why going to conferences and networking is so much fun and Emily is doing some amazing things, which we will be talking about. So to get started, since everyone's path is a little different, can you just tell me a little bit about your career path, where you started and where you are today? It's so exciting, your changes, that some new things you're doing. I'm very excited about it, but she'll tell us.
Honestly, my career path has been kind of all over the place. It's funny, I was listening to your talk that you did with Michaela Becker recently, and I strangely have some interesting similarities with Mikkel's background. So I got my bachelor's degree in journalism and mass communication. Yeah. And once I graduated from that program, I moved to a different state and was trying to get a job in the journalism field or as a photographer, which I was also working on at the time, and decided to, in the meantime, try working at a vet clinic. And I managed to get a job as an assistant. I had some like shelter volunteer, you know, experience, which helped me get that position, and fell in love immediately. Aww. And kind of just like, you know, screw journalism. Like this is what I'm doing. I actually, you might not know this, but I actually was very close to going to vet tech school and then ended up assisting with a surgery that was like, too much for me. Nope.
Right.
And I very promptly rescinded my like application and everything.
Understandable.
To vet tech school.
Yes.
But from there, I ended up working in an animal shelter after working at the vet clinic. Then went back to the vet hospital, kind of dabbled in a few different things, ended up really falling in love with behavior. And around the same time, also started pursuing a degree in anthrozoology, which is the study of the relationships between humans and other animals. And, you know, kind of in combination with working through that degree, started really diving in, learning more about behavior. Got some certifications and training in behavior, and eventually started seeing clients and loved that, you know, and I loved working with clients, and there's just something about that, you know, feels so empowering to be able to like help people and their pets have better relationships, better lives. I ended up co-founding a nonprofit, which is the Humane Alliance of Rescue Trainers, which provides behavior support to shelters and rescues at no cost. And then the pandemic hit, and I found myself, you know, thinking back on the things that I really love to do, and really what that is that I love teaching. I love teaching people. I love talking with people. I love discussing. And of course, I love spending time with other animals as well. But really where I get the most fulfillment is like helping people to see other animals differently and thus, you know, kind of change how they just are with other animals. And so I ended up finding this amazing degree program. I'm not sure if you've heard of the Institute for Humane Education, but it's this wonderful organization. They have partnered with Antioch University to provide a doctorate in education. And that's what I've been doing. I started that in late 2020, and I have one semester of classes left, and then I'm working on my dissertation for the next
Party.
like year and a half. So yeah, and now my as I've kind of gone through the program and I've learned more about animal behavior and animal relationships in other settings. I've started to develop a passion for animal sanctuaries, and that's kind of become my new path or goal, if you will. I've been really thinking about how wonderful it would be to do humane education in a sanctuary. So yeah, kind of gone through some twists and turns there on my path, but I feel like it's all just kind of led me here, and I'm happy to be where I am.
No, I love it. And I have worked, we were catching up before the podcast, and I've had the pleasure of working for a lot of farm animal sanctuaries, which is a whole nother fun experience since I'm sure not everyone has had that experience. And I'm very thankful for those experiences. And I love animal sanctuaries, and I'm actually currently working on some resources for them as well. And I'm so stoked when you're like, because last time I saw her, we were each doing similar things, but again, it's the same career, but there's a lot of amazing different paths that you can take. So when she was like, "Hey, Tabitha, I'm going to start working with animal sanctuaries," I was like, "That is amazing," because shelters and vet med, of course, behavior resources can be limited, or even those connecting communication type bonds with animals and humans. Communication skills with other humans as a human. Those things are lacking in a lot of places, but especially in animal sanctuaries. So I'm all about how can we help and provide education, which also helps to provide support. So selfishly, I'm super stoked that you are kind of there in your career path. And I'm loving that you are continuing to learn. And I didn't realize you were that close to being done with this degree. So that, I mean, a dissertation is a whole nother thing, but you got it. You're a genius. It's gonna be
Hopefully.
fine. You're
We'll
like,
see.
I'll take that. I'll take that.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do like an update in the spring of next year, and I can tell everyone whether or not I'm actually fine.
And could you tell me, I already know a little bit, but if you're okay with sharing a little bit about what your dissertation is on and what you're covering?
I mean it's very much kind of what I just mentioned. I'm kind of looking at two different pieces. One is like what does adult humane education look like in sanctuary settings? So for example, when sanctuaries are giving tours or even interacting with the public via social media, how are we influencing how our adult learners think and feel about other animals? What strategies are we using to educate? And then the other piece, which is really tapping into my behavior background, is looking at animal agency and consent in sanctuary settings. So, one thing that you and I both have in common is that we are big fans of fear-free. And so, unfortunately, to my knowledge, there are not any fear-free resources yet for like farmed animals. And so that's definitely what has been one of my inspirations. Thinking about like how can we bring like cooperative care to animal sanctuaries, and also like thinking about how can we, like when we have tours, for example, how can we consider consent, rather than, just people kind of coming into a sanctuary thinking that it's like a petting zoo,
Right.
how can we teach people about, the whether or not this goat wants to be pet or touched, you know, is important for us to consider. And it's important to watch their body language and let them decide whether or not to interact, rather than just, you know, letting people loose in the paddock to run and find a goat to hug or something. I'm kind of exploring those two different things, in slightly different ways. But the thing that I love about like looking at the adult humane education piece is that it's so expansive and includes so many other issues. So it's not just teaching about, you know, like farmed animal behavior or farmed animal welfare. It's also looking at like how can we be more mindful of the experience of the humans that come to the sanctuary or the humans in our community, and also how are we influencing the environment with our practices in this setting. So I that's one thing I love about humane education is it has that very holistic perspective, which I think is really important.
And I think a lot of behavior professionals I work with kind of approach their clients or their business utilizing humane education, because I know for myself, for example, as I learned more about behavior, I learned more about human behavior because there's a lot of similarities. And my approach to, like you said, I think sometimes people can focus on the animal and that is very important, but we forget about the human learners. And sometimes people can be cynical or maybe not assume the best intents of or create narratives of those people ahead of time. And I think that's important for any organization, but sanctuaries, like real talk, a lot of it needs to be supported by the community and funded. And then also, I'm sure both of us have seen when I'm clicker training a pig, for example. So we're including like a relaxed, happy pig. We're showing a person that may have different viewpoints of what a pig is to them. And when they start to see how they're learning, and it may even just be going to a station or a touch behavior. But like you said, you're really opening minds of how that person maybe approaches not just other humans, but every animal. And then that kind of slips into how they approach the environment. You're probably going to word it way better. But I think that I've definitely, because both me and Emily are vegan, I'm sure you're not surprised. And it's been really interesting. I think both of our paths in working in animal welfare and seeing different viewpoints of what animals are. Based on, of course, there's individuals, there's cultural things, there's so many things that affect that person's learning history. But it's been really interesting, and I think it's allowed me to approach, for example, hoarding situations or some other situations that have been challenging. I have quite a lot of empathy, which I can't say I maybe had 15 years ago, when approaching those situations. So again, it's just this humane education aspect really just touches on so many things. And honestly, it's corny, but it just makes you a better person. Like, you just feel better about animals, people, and then you start to care about the environment. It's just this beautiful thing. So if you were to define, because I know we talked a little bit about it, but if you were to define humane education, how would you define that for the listeners?
Yeah, good question. And I think it's important to define it because it's a field that's been around for a very long time, but it's definitely evolved. And even now there are different, you know, kind of bubbles or approaches to humane education. You know, we often see humane education in shelter settings, but what humane education looks like in those settings can be very different than that might be like when it's done in a school or as part of like a nonprofit's work or a different type of nonprofit. And so the approach to humane education that I've been kind of focusing on in my research and in my education been a much more comprehensive approach to it. So it's going beyond just focusing on like how to be nicer to companion animals, which
Right.
sometimes that tends to you see that a lot. And so this more comprehensive approach, it really acknowledges and teaches about how like the well-being of humans, non-human animals, and the environment is all really interconnected. And so, you know, I see human education as this like educational practice. So something that we can integrate in anything that we're doing. It's a practice that's centered on inspiring like critical thinking, empathy, and compassionate action in how humans interact with all beings and the environments that we all share. So that's kind of my like, I don't know, just the way I like
That's a
to define
beautiful definition. And I think
it.
all of us as animal professionals out there, since that's who this podcast is geared to, can probably understand how humane education is very relevant to us as animal professionals or animal caregivers. But if you had to share a few points about why it's important and relevant to animal professionals, what would be your go-to things?
Another good question. So, as you've mentioned, humane education is already so integrated into what we do when we are working in these professions, like in animal sheltering or in behavior vet med. And the thing is, though, is we don't always necessarily acknowledge that what we're doing is humane education. And so I think when we do see the importance of what we're doing, when we see ourselves as educators, which sometimes we don't,
Right.
I think that that allows us to kind of, I don't know, step into this role more fully and potentially have more of an impact. So, it's just a kind of an example of, in case people are kind of struggling, like, what do you mean? Like, how am I a humane educator? For example, when I was working like in animal sheltering, we would counsel adopters about, pets' behavior, how to provide good welfare for this particular animal, given, their, health or behavior issues. And so as we're doing that, we're prompting them to critically think about, how is this going to look in my home? Maybe critically thinking about the experience that animal had before they came to the shelter. This is, of course, deepening their empathy for that animal. And then we hope that through that process, this will then inspire the adopters to change their own behavior towards the pet. So, to go home and actually take our advice on how to like integrate the animal into their home, for example. And so, we're doing this already, but I really think that if we can acknowledge and I guess like embody our role as humane educators, we can be even more intentional in terms of like how we are teaching and inspiring our community members, our clients. And this doesn't have to be like kind of my approach to this isn't like us, coming up with something totally new. It's really just making small changes to like how we talk about other animals, and kind of considering like, is there a way I can maybe expand someone's perspective about this particular animal, or maybe even beyond that individual animal? So yeah, I mean, I think that it's human education. I love it so much because it can be what you make it in so many ways, and it's been very traditionally like kind of catered towards children, but it really, like adults need humane education
Of
too. Like,
course. Yeah.
like the so many of the issues that humane education focuses on are like adults need to get it together and we need to do better. So,
Facts.
as like exactly. So like, you and I, like the people who are listening, like we are already out there like teaching adults. So, I think this is a really cool opportunity to maybe more intentionally expose them to humane education as well. So that's kind of, I guess, like my initial thoughts on that question. But I feel like humane education is so relevant to this work in so many ways.
And I could definitely see that. Like, for example, as a technician, the way I first went over a treatment plan or what some people call an estimate, because language matters. So we might say, I'm going to go over the estimate with for surgery, for example, with a client. I give them the printout and I say, this is the cost. Here's the estimate. That's not the most helpful communication. And I'm sure that's how I started. And a lot of this is through trial and error and getting better and more skills in communication to the point where instead, this is the treatment plan. Let me go through each individual thing on this treatment plan with the client. I'm assessing their body language. I'm actively listening to what they're saying, because many people are, I'm taking my experience with other clients. For example, a lot of people are concerned about anesthesia and they may not mention it. So I address it without them even mentioning it because so many clients are concerned about it. And I'm really kind of meeting them where they're at, addressing their concerns, going through each thing and not just saying, here's the pre-med, this is that, this, but I'm explaining what each thing is, why it's there. And of course, this helps the client better empathize and understand what we're actually doing, because some clients can misunderstand. I'm not justifying clients being like this, but also now that I'm involved in many worlds and I have more skill sets, I understand where sometimes clients can get the perception that they just want my money. I'm not justifying it, but I also can understand where some of those thought processes come from. Or, for example, if I'm examining an animal, I'm describing everything I'm doing, the body language, what I'm finding, versus if I examine an animal, I'm touching them, I give an exam, but I'm not communicating with the owner. The owner might say, I just spent $65 for him to touch my animal for 5 seconds. So I think that communication aspect is so important and a big part of humane education. And then also when I'm going through that treatment plan, for example, because I still go, even though I'm working as a behavior consultant, a lot of my clients trust me, not that they don't trust their veterinary professionals, but since we already have a relationship, they'll ask me to go through the treatment plan after their veterinary clinic did with them. And I'm addressing, hey, this is an IV catheter is important. A registered veterinary technician is monitoring anesthesia. This is why, this is what that means. And in turn, not only am I teaching them how to advocate for their animals, but I'm teaching them to be kinder to veterinary professionals, to break a lot of these myths that we're trying to take your money, all of these things that I hear so often. But I can understand where some of those perceptions were created, I guess. That is a common example that I would think of. And as far as some specific strategies, because again, I, like you mentioned, I think a lot of us are already doing this every day, but specific strategies to improve on, or if someone's more interested in wanting to be better at this, because all of you amazing listeners are always improving because you're wonderful. What would you recommend as far as some specific strategies that people can start to do today?
Yeah. I mean, I love that those, I love those examples that you shared, because it, I'll kind of maybe use talking about those examples as you know, kind of segue into some specific strategies. But like, I think it's important to, like, you know, when we're talking about like communication, like client communication and, you know, humane education, it's something that, you know, goes both ways. Like you're by taking the time to sit down with someone and go through, you know, like the cost of, you know, treatment, like you're not only, you know, like inspiring more kindness and patience for the vet tech and, you know, for what the animal is going to go through in that treatment, you know, when they receive that treatment, but you're also saying, like, you know, to that human, like, I understand that this is a lot. And these are important things, and I'm going to take the time to walk you through it. You know, and so you're also showing empathy for the client in that moment as well. And it's like a big piece of this in terms of like specific strategies is modeling, that modeling. So being able to, you know, like step into that interaction with empathy and patience and say, you know, I'm going to walk you through this. We're in this together. Let me know if you have questions. That just completely changes the interaction. And of course, you're going to have some people who have been having a rough day and it doesn't matter how nice you are. But oftentimes when you come into an interaction with that, like, patience and compassion, you know, you get that back. Like you're so much more likely to open up that person to also being more empathetic and patient. And in terms of or in kind of with that in mind, something that I think is so important is throughout the humane education process, the communication process is really building trust with your learners, ensuring that like this is a judgment-free space. A big piece of humane education is, as I mentioned, critical thinking, which is all about like how do we challenge these biases and assumptions that we have. And so if we're going to do that with our client, we need to do it in partnership with them. We need to do it together. We need to make sure that, you know, you're not going to be, I'm not going to blame you or shame you for your assumptions and beliefs, because so often, you know, they have learned those from other professionals or the media. And so, you know, building that trust, getting curious with your learners together, like, oh, it's so interesting that you, you know, that you heard that from this trainer. Like, I wonder why that stuck with you, or, you know, like it just kind of creating a space that feels safe enough for everyone to ask questions.
I love that you shared that with me. I love that you brought this blog in to ask me about it. Let's talk about it. Or instead of, for example, instead of saying, do you have any questions after going over the treatment plan? I always say, how are you feeling about the treatment plan? It's again, super subtle, but guys, it is a game changer, because we're allowing, like you said, we're kind of creating an environment where I'm not just saying the routine stuff, vomiting, diarrhea, do you, you know, all that stuff. I'm just asking more open-ended questions. And also I see a lot of clients actually soften up as I talk to them, because a lot of them are very surprised with that approach. And even if, like you said, if they're in a rush to get somewhere, because real life, right, I'm planting a seed of kindness and I'm going to make a note because they were rushing, or maybe they just got a really hard diagnosis and they're over threshold. And I understand they're not going to listen to anything I'm saying, because we just told them their animal has a, like, real talk, like, they're over threshold. We need to go over it with them, be there for them, but then schedule a follow-up call. Because we just, they can't listen. Even my own pets, I can't listen once you say, this is like, your cat has a heart murmur all of a sudden. And I know heart murmurs and cats are, that's a whole nother thing. But that was something that I got told from recently. And she's been having some other issues. And my brain just shuts down. And I'm a technician, because you're just so overwhelmed with kind of grief and surprise. And I think that's what a lot of people do when they see treatment plans, because they're not anticipating maybe the costs that they see because of a lot of the, like Susan Freeman says, cultural fog out there, the way what they're seeing, what they're being presented with. So yeah, I think asking open-ended questions, being empathetic, kind of thinking of what, because we can all say that, Emily, as you know, right? I think we all say, let's be better, let's assume good intent. But do you have any, I know I have some that I've worked on with retraining my brain, as far as how people can actually, instead of just saying it, which is a start, to be fair, how can they actually start to utilize these techniques, as far as like, I'm going to be more empathetic towards this person. I'm not going to just say I have empathy for people or patience. I know that's kind of a challenging question, but.
It is. Yeah. I think my, as you were asking the question, my mind went to two different places. One is slowing down.
I love it.
It's so much easier to, you know, take a moment and be and find that empathy, and, you know, to practice that critical thinking and to kind of go through that process when we have the space and time to do so. When you are rushed, it's everything is going to be harder, and that includes, you know, modeling empathy and kind of going through this humane education process, because in my kind of how I perceive humane education, it's something that is very much like a supportive process where we are learning in partnership together about the world. And so we can't do that if we are like, you know, like, gotta get going. Like, yeah. I have another patient who's been waiting for me, or I, you know, like, I've got to run to this other client, or, you know, I have 10 other dogs to vaccinate, you know, or whatever, right? Like, we have to, I think that our culture in general is just way too fast paced, and it makes things like empathy and compassion and critical thinking hard. And then the other piece that popped in my head when you asked that question was having empathy and compassion for ourselves first,
Yes,
which I
very
know is
much
something
so.
you talk about on this podcast a lot. Like, it is so much harder to, you were talking about being over threshold, right? And like, if we're not taking care of ourselves, if we don't have, if we're not feeling like, if we don't have that empathy and compassion for ourselves, it's just so much harder to extend it to other people. And it's interesting because I feel like when I look back at my own journey, and Tab, I think you mentioned this earlier when we were chatting, like how, 15 years ago, like you might not have been like as empathetic as you are now. And I know, like when I came into this field, like I was like, I want to work with animals because people suck. And but the longer I've been in this field, the more that I've learned, not only about other people and other communities, and different like social justice issues and different, capitalism, all those things, like, and then also learned more about myself and, and worked through my own shit, if I'm being honest. My empathy for other people have just, I feel like has just been so much more, has just expanded so much more. So I think that's another really important piece is like, we've got to be kind to ourselves too. And we also just need to slow down. We're trying to do too much all the time and really hard to engage those, like the empathy parts of our brain when we're just like, go, go, go.
No, I think that's a great. And of course, you may be thinking, but I have all this stuff to do. But all of us guys, real talk, okay? I work in very fast-paced environments. All of us have time to take a deep breath. That's 2 seconds. It's funny. If you would have told me I did breathing strategies, again, I've learned a lot of healthy coping mechanisms. And I'm working towards making my stress work for me. And that's more advanced stuff that I'm getting into now. But I think I breathe all the, I don't even realize, I know we all breathe, but I don't even realize the other day I was a little stressed and I just started deep breathing. And it's like anything else. The more you practice, the better you get at it. So the other day I was stressed and I did it without having to think about it. So of course, breathing, but actually like sitting for a second, closing my eyes and taking a deep breath. Especially when you're going to go in to talk to a client, for example, that may be in a challenging situation. They may be complaining about the bill. And again, there are some people who are, but it is the fewer guys that may be struggling due to other things. We don't know their trigger stats, right? They were late on a bill. They hit every red light. They missed a appointment and they came to the appointment late. All of these things. And it's not, that's one thing a mantra, I do a lot of positive self-talk, like a lot. And one thing I always remember is it's not personal because, and that's helped me just that little mantra. That's helped me be so much more empathetic because we're humans, guys. If we take things personal, we become reactive. And of course, just like a dog or a cat, if a cat approaches another cat exhibiting like fearful or aggressive behaviors, that other, that animal is going to respond. We are the same way. Now, some humans, just like animals, may shut down. Some humans may become more reactive. All those things are important to consider. So again, all of you who are saying you don't have time, love you guys, but you have time to take a deep breath. There's no way you don't. So practice, practice, practice. But I think that's a really, those are some super practical tips, slowing down and being kind to yourself. And that might just be like, I'm fucking sad today. Because that's something I've gotten a lot better at. Because I'm happy a lot, but emotions happen in a, they're complex, right? So if I was happy all the time, happiness wouldn't be happiness. That's like a super deep thing. But real talk. So I think that those are super practical things for people to do. And as far as some strategies for inspiring compassionate action, and this could be, like you said, towards the clients that we're working with, or I know a lot of us, thankfully, out there do care about social justice issues. And damn, is that important right now, you guys. Woo, that's a whole other thing. So again, not just doing this with the animals that we work with, but like you mentioned, environmental issues, social justice. What would you recommend for some strategies as far as inspiring compassionate action. And I love that word. That's an Emily word, but I love it.
I also love that term.
That needs to be on a t-shirt. Compassionate action. Get shit done, but don't be a dick. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the one thing that I guess maybe to just mention is, you know, like we've been talking about empathy and compassion. And the one thing that I like to remind people of is that they are actually two different things. And of course, you know, depending on who you're reading, like, you know, people define it differently. But,
right.
You know, empathy is very much like, you know, recognizing and understanding another's suffering. But compassion is being moved by it. So compassion is what inspires that action to decrease the suffering and improve the well-being of another. And so compassionate action is, you know, my kind of like let's highlight the action piece here, because we can be like empathetic all day, but like at the end of the day, we need more compassionate yes. action in this world. And so, you know, the first kind of recommendation there is to, like, if we want to inspire compassionate action in other people, we have to demonstrate it ourselves. Again, kind of going back to that modeling, like, we've got to live this work, right? There are so many different things you can do, and it can get kind of overwhelming, like feeling like you have to do all the things. Just take it day by day, piece by piece. You know, for example, you can, I'm a big fan of, as we mentioned, fear-free. And I think very much like integrating fear-free practices into like your shelter or your vet practice is an act of compassion. And, you know, making sure that spaces, your like these environments that you are in, like your vet hospital, even if you are a trainer and you're going into a space, thinking about how are you making that space safe for everyone there? Making sure that you know, all species, various, you know, different populations of humans are feeling safe in that space. So, you know, for example, in shelters, creating a calmer environment using classical music or pheromones, or making sure you have sound barriers, non-slip surfaces. And in terms of how we make these spaces safer for humans, you know, ensuring that you are doing the work and you're learning more about like anti-racism and, you know, recognizing and eliminating microaggressions from, you know, your workplace culture, or from your individual personal right. Repertoire, making sure we're removing gendered language and how we label our bathrooms, so that everyone feels safe and welcomed in that space. Not making assumptions about gender identity or sexual orientation or race or disability or other aspects of people's identities. Like, so many different pieces, you know, involved in like, how do we take action so that everyone feels safe, that we're making sure that we're promoting positive welfare, positive well-being for everyone. And then, of course, you know, being mindful of how we are impacting the environment, you know, being more mindful consumers. One thing about like shelter and vet med is that we use a lot of stuff. We do a lot of things that, you know, like there's obviously a lot of like discussion and critical thinking that needs right. to go into like, how do we make these spaces more like environmentally friendly? But I think those are conversations worth having. And then also, you know, being kind to ourselves and recognizing that, you know, there's so many different things that we can do, but we shouldn't let that paralyze us and not do anything. We can't just keep doing what we've always been doing, because guess what? It's not working. People don't yeah. feel safe to come into our shelters and veterinary clinics. There's so many people who aren't getting care and their animals. And so we need to do better. We just have to figure out how to do better with the resources that we have. So those are kind of like a lot, but also not a lot of
recommendations. No, for sure. I think I always tell people, like you said, it's very easy, especially right now, to become overwhelmed and then just kind of shut down. And I understand that I understand that 100%. And that's where mental health resources and taking care of yourself and working on some coping mechanisms to handle stress, that is very important. But I can say, and I think this is something in shelter med, we're not working on it as much, but we are. But in vet med, thankfully, I know a lot of amazing organizations and colleagues who are doing the work, even just to start to have a conversation, because some of these things understandably can make people uncomfortable. And I recently attended VMX, and I went to Pride. Is it Pride VMC? Had a whole like day. And I went to a few of the lectures, and the two veterinarians, I'll have to list their names. They shared their stories of just challenging things that they've been put into in the veterinary space. And these are things that I'm aware of happening, but just hearing their stories was so fucking powerful. And like, I feel like I'm doing action, but I think connecting, that's another thing, connecting with your colleagues and hearing their stories and listening is so much, because I can say, hey, as a cis, you know, white female, like, real talk, like, I have empathy, right? I do. But I also have to have compassionate action. Like, I'm writing senators, I'm going to lectures where uncomfortable conversations are happening. And by uncomfortable, meaning, again, even though I support what they're doing, and of course, all of these social justice issues, we have to talk about uncomfortable shit. And you have to challenge yourself and put yourself in uncomfortable situations. And literally, that's the only way we're going to grow. And like Emily said, I think so many of us kind of shut down, or we can be afraid to ask questions or do action because we might be doing it wrong.
I just wanted to share this one quote that a professor of mine said to me once, but I've also seen other people share it. So I'm not sure that it's necessarily like, can't attribute to one specific person. But basically, it's that if you're comfortable and you're trying to do this work, like, you're doing it wrong. Like,
that's great.
It's supposed
yeah.
to be, it's supposed to be uncomfortable. Like, in order to like change how we think about the world, how we think about the systems of like oppression that kind of that shape our world, we have to be willing to look at our own practices, our own ways of thinking. We are all like, we all have work to do. So we can't just like, it's going to be uncomfortable regardless. And I personally, like, I've always had a really hard time with that. I have, you know, like, I think, you know, as someone with like lots of anxiety and other stuff, like, I've always really shied away from uncomfortable discussions. I'm very conflict avoidant. But, you know, there's a certain point where I've realized that, like, it's a privilege to be able to choose to not be a part of, you know, conversations right. about race or gender or, you know, like, so I think that being a humane educator, you know, inspiring compassionate action is very much being willing to be uncomfortable and, but also to support each other and support our learners through that process.
And create an environment that is, yeah, and conducive to learning. So again, like,
yes, yeah,
understanding that this may be new to this person, and I understand that that's challenging. Trust me. whether it's a social justice issue, or I'm showing you how to handle an animal differently than you were taught initially, right? Because we all want to feel right. It's just a human instinct. It's real talk. But I love being wrong now, and not always. I'm still working on it. It's a process. I'm not going to lie to you, but I've gotten, sometimes thankfully I do a lot of collabs and I talk to a lot of colleagues like you and friends. But one of the biggest things I miss about working in general practice, which toxic relationships and all that stuff is very real, but I miss the team, the connection, and then also getting, now, was that feedback always constructive? No, but getting that. So sometimes I'll share a video of me training with a colleague and be like, what can I do better? Because I work for myself, and you can get in a, whether you're working in a practice or a shelter, I think we've all done this. You can get really comfortable, especially if you're not getting sources or news or information from other people. You're not attending CE. It's really easy to get comfortable doing something and not growing. And that's really dangerous. I think we've all been there. What, again, for all these things. What a great conversation, Emily.
I agree.
This is so, see, she was like, I'm not sure. She was a little nervous, even though she's amazing. And I was like, this is just like a conversation between friends. We're fine. Just people tend to listen, which is wonderful. We love all of you. But kind of to end, since I know everybody wants to learn more, where can people learn more about humane education? And then can you also talk about, because you have an amazing consulting business, and then a little bit more about HEART, which is that wonderful organization that you helped to co-found?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there are a lot of great resources out there on humane education. I kind of the main one that I would recommend is just going to humaneeducation.org. That's the website for the Institute for Humane Education. They have some great resources, but also if you're someone who might be interested in continuing your education, they have resources on that as well. If you are listening and you work in a sanctuary or maybe even a shelter or rescue, the Open Sanctuary Project also has some really great resources on humane education. And, you know, they're very much sanctuary focused, but I definitely think they, a lot of them on humane education still apply, like if you're working in a shelter setting. And then I do also have some resources on my website, you know, kind of diving in a little bit more into humane education. I have like some talks that I've done that are available for free on my site. And yeah, I do offer consulting and continuing education for professionals through my website, and also I like to, you know, occasionally post things on social media. I try to avoid it as much as I can, but you know, sometimes I like to dip my toe in the water and then like run away. But yeah, so my business is Coexistence Consulting. My website is coexistence.consulting. And you can find me on Instagram just via my name, emily.trinetti. And then the Humane Alliance of Rescue Trainers, as I mentioned, is a nonprofit. We co-founded this nonprofit with this incredible team of dog trainers. And we've done a lot of work, and it's grown. And we work with a lot of shelters and rescues, and we're able to provide behavior support. And we're able to do it at no cost. So pretty awesome. If you're an animal trainer and you're interested in joining us, we can keep providing these services. Please get in touch. Or if you're a rescue who could use our help, also check out our website, which is rescuetrainers.org.
It is an amazing organization. And I'll share all these lovely links in the show notes. And
cool.
Essentially kind of how it works is, because I'm one of the trainers, so it's very well organized trainers. So we would love to have you. Please come. No pressure though. It's not that you have to see like 5 cases a week or anything like that. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because I think other people might hear that and just assume, but it's something very practical that you can do to help animal welfare in a very tremendous way, but in a very manageable way. And HEART does a great job at communicating and handling some of the logistics that you may not want to take care of because you have your own business.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the key motivators for creating this organization. So, you know, me and a couple of my colleagues, like we loved volunteering for shelters and rescues, but you know, as soon as you like let a rescue know that you're an animal trainer and you're interested in volunteering, like suddenly it's like you're on call and you're like getting, you know, calls all the time about behavior issues. And it's like, it's so hard to manage. It's, you know, it sucks to say no when you're overwhelmed. And so we really wanted to create this organization as a way to allow trainers to give back and also do so in a way that's very structured, where like, you know, like we, like HEART, we are the middleman, if you will, so right. That like we handle, you know, like we do the, we get the case requests for behavior help through our website, and then we send the request out to our list of trainers. And so if you are available and you're feeling like you want to take a case, then you can. Otherwise, you don't have to say anything. And then, you know, and so it's like, you know, we would love our trainers to take, you know, maybe a couple cases a year. three cases a year, ideally, and do ask that our trainers, aim to donate about four sessions per case. So you're looking at 12 appointments a year, but we are also very understanding if stuff comes up and, and you're not able to meet that goal. Like, we don't keep track. We really just want people to be involved, to have a way to give back, and then of course also to help animals in shelters and rescues. So yeah, burn like trying to prevent burnout and compassion fatigue has been a huge like kind of guiding principle for this organization, and we're also really big on trying to develop community amongst our trainers. And we're still very new and have a lot of growing and whatnot to do. So yeah, I'm really excited about our work and how we're going to grow in the future.
Yes, I love them, and I wish there was more organizations like that. But again, it's something that I highly recommend to everybody. And the trainers are evidence-based animal welfare positive, which is a new term I'm going to be using because I love it. And Dr. Bacon at VMX used it, and I was like, this is exactly, oh, I love it. But that is also helpful because, as we all know, animal training isn't regulated and it could be really hard and challenging to find help. So they also vet their trainers. Not that they're like testing you, but that is a really important part of these types of organizations. So thank you so much for everything you do, Emily. You are an inspiration girl. I'm so glad we met. We connected instantly because we are on very similar wavelengths and you are doing such amazing work. And ooh, I feel like I'm a CE provider now, and I feel like I have to have you for an event. But we will talk about that in the future. Thank you so much for being here, Emily. I really appreciate
Thank you so much. And also, you're amazing too. And also an inspiration. Yeah, this has been great. I've loved chatting about this topic with you. And I'm excited to work more on maybe some CE in the future.
Party. What an awesome conversation. I loved how she shared some strategies for inspiring compassionate action. And I am definitely going to look into learning more about humane education and taking some classes. Ooh, nerding out over here. But I hope everyone else enjoyed the interview as much as me, and have a wonderful day.